Hi, it's Mary Lou Tyler. I have a wonderful guest this week, Jason Vargas. In the trenches, this guy is like, you know, the fourth employee at Data Nyze. If you don't know Data Nyze, go ahead and look it up. They're a really great company that you'll probably want to get to know, especially if you're doing business development. Jason is the managing director of the sales development group over there. And I'm hoping today's talk, and it sounds like from our little precursor, that it's going to be full of messaging and full of teachings for you guys that you know, maybe challenge the status quo, which is really what we're looking for. You know, Jason's world is more into the analytics side of things, letting the data kind of drive where we're going. And I think his outlook, his views, plus doing this as a job and really getting into the trenches is going to give you guys a 20-minute blast of a lot of knowledge. So sit back and let's introduce Jason and I'll let him take it away.
Cool. Thank you, Mary Lou. It's an honor to be in your podcast. So thank you for the invite. I'm excited to chat with you today.
Yeah, no, it's wonderful. In the last few weeks, it's been really fun because, you know, I've been doing this for 30 years now. So not that I'm sitting on my laurels or anything like that, because I'm a data person too. So I'm really looking to get the data to tell me where to go and how things are changing. But, you know, you're like on the rocket ship of change over there. So I think what you have to say today, and just in our pre-conversation about the differences and what's changed, is going to be so helpful. So you pick where you want to start and we'll go flow from there.
Oh man. Okay. Why don't we start looking at how do you actually identify the right types of companies or accounts to target? I think it really starts there. Mm-hmm. It's a foundation for a lot of things. It's a foundation for the effectiveness of the SDR, setting meetings. It helps with, you know, when the AEs on the call with them, understand that they are targeting the right accounts. It could also, you know, if you know you're targeting the right account, it could impact your sales cycle, things of that sort. So why don't we get started there?
Okay.
And then we can see where the conversation takes us.
That sounds good. Yeah, no, targeting, what I call segmenting into accounts is just wonderful. So let's go. Tell us what we should be knowing about that piece of the framework.
Yeah, you know, with the access to a lot of data out there, I think companies, they really should start looking at is, the term ICP or deal customer profile. I think it's something that really, really needs to be honed in. Mm-hmm. But most companies I talk to, when I sit down with other companies, you know, they primarily segment their accounts based on firmographic data. There's nothing wrong with it, but it doesn't tell the whole story and whether an account's going to be a good account. For example, I talked to a lot of organizations and they say, you know, they segment their accounts, you know, SMB, corporate or enterprise, typically by the number of employees. So, but here's the interesting thing. If you classify, as an example, if you classify an enterprise company, whichever has, 1,000 employees, between 1,000 and 5,000 employees, if that's classified as enterprise, and your corporate accounts are classified, you know, between 500 and 999. Mm-hmm. So here's the interesting part. If that corporate account moves from 999 to 1,000, so they just add one more person, all of a sudden it's classified as enterprise. Now, nothing really changed other than adding another person, right? So again, firmographic can help you, but it doesn't tell the whole story. The other component I think folks want to start looking at is technographics. Basically, the technology landscape or all the technologies or softwares that a company uses across organizations. So most, I don't know if you know this, but most enterprise organizations, the average enterprise organization uses over 1,030 technologies across the organization. Hmm. That is insane. So
it is.
A lot of companies are incorporating technologies into their process, from HR to finance, to sales and marketing. Like marketing stacks are getting really big. Sales stacks are becoming a lot larger than they used to be. So the sophistication of the organization is skyrocketing, right? So you want to be able to leverage technology data, or as we call it here, data analytics, technographics. You want to be able to utilize that when you're creating your ICP, so that way you can understand the sophistication of your buyer. If you just use firmographic data, all you're going to know is they have certain revenue ranges, certain employee ranges, and you'll know the address and phone number. Not too telling, right? But if you can see an organization move from using a marketing automation system like HubSpot and a CRM like, say, Pipedrive, and all of a sudden you see that they purchased Salesforce and Marketo, that is much more telling than simply they added one or two more employees, right? It tells you that, okay, this buyer is moving from a less sophisticated group to a much more sophisticated type of organization. So as a sales rep, I'm going to prioritize those companies more. So circling back to the ICP, we want to be able to begin to segment tier, however you want to define it, using technographics and firmographic data. So that way you have a much clearer picture and you can understand who you should be prioritizing, how you can really classify enterprise, corporate, mid-market, right? And then how do you tier each of those segments?
Mm-hmm.
So that's step number one for me. So anytime, you know, I'm talking to a company or I'm teaching new sales reps here, I really have to understand why we came up with our own classifications here and why we you know, call enterprise company here, or how we defined it here at Datanize.
Yeah, a lot of times, you know, in the new book, Predictable Prospecting, we actually don't even use the term ICP. We called it an ideal account profile, the IAP.
Totally.
And the reason being is because we have, as you said, you know, the firmographic and the equipment and technology, but we also are looking at more some operational overlays like purchasing policies, the decision-making process, and situational factors that we can overlay to that. So yes, I agree with you. I think it's getting, since we have such rich databases now, it's getting to the point where we can really finely tune who we want to go after and target. And then obviously we have to, if we're in an organization where business development is 100% of one's time, then we have to make sure that we're giving them enough companies to work so they're occupied and they're not spinning their wheels. So I agree with you 100%. So given that, what is next? So we have the new ideal account profiles with more layers of segmentation that we can apply than the old ICP. What other things have you seen that directly impact performance and this concept that I've been throwing around called maximizing the return on effort?
Yeah, so that's a great segue and kind of adding to what we were just talking about. So one of the things that we were able to do, and this is something that, you know, other organizations can do, is once you've really identified what those accounts look like, and this obviously should be done by management, we don't allow any of our SDRs to prospect for new accounts, to look for new accounts. Management has taken care of that. So all of our accounts are pre-qualified. So what we were able to do to maximize everyone's time is that an AE or SDR can no longer determine or can no longer say whether an account is qualified. So what this does is that the moment an SDR books a meeting with the right persona, so the right title, right, with a VP, director, and above, with that pre-qualified account, when that person shows up to the call, it's an automatic sales accepted opportunity by the AE. No longer is it, okay, we have to BANT, or if the AE gets on the phone, like, oh, I don't know if this is a fit. Like, no, management has determined based on the account criteria that we've specified and looked for. So if it's a pre-qualified account and the title shows up to the phone call, it's an automatic sales accepted by the AE. And this has accelerated our sales cycle dramatically.
I bet. Yeah, I'm still working with clients who let the AEs decide who these target accounts are, and they populate the CRM with those accounts. And then there's a reserve of accounts that don't make it into the target ones, that if the target ones fall out for some reason, then they can petition to have these extended accounts thrown into the target. But it's driven by the account executive, not management. So that's quite a culture change.
Yeah. Yeah. So we'll think about it. Okay. So when you talk about maximizing time, mm-hmm. You want your SDRs to book meetings, right? Qualified meetings. You want them to be working into an account, book meetings. And with AEs, you want them to be focusing on closing, right? So
right.
If they're spending half their time prospecting, looking for accounts and determining whether they think it's a good fit, that's a lot of control that you put into the hands of those individual contributors for, you know, the success of a company. They should be focusing on what we hire them to do, right? So no longer do my SDRs prospect, because you can spend 40, 50, 60% of your time prospecting versus if you take that 60% of that time you're spending doing that on booking meetings. I mean, talk about maximizing your effort and your output. And same for accounting executives, right? So if we have AEs working two accounts, we're going to give them a set of pre-qualified accounts, not have them go scouring, sourcing across the web to find an account that they think, just based on their own gut or intuition, or you know, maybe some subset of pre-qualification data that they need to find. Like, no, that I strongly believe that that should be done by management.
Right.
Because so ultimately, management. But go ahead.
For those of who are listening, just to get clarity around this, in some instances, the SDRs are also tasked with net new records, where they have to actually go out and figure out how to add to their list with net new names. What Jason is talking about is that they're pre-fed with the right number of accounts and the right type of account and contact records. So their focus is on the pre-sales conversation and actually getting that first conversation going. They don't have to worry about trying to feed the beast. And so that really takes a big admin time off of the SDR in order to be able to perform his function. The next thing Jason said was the AEs who sometimes create the demand of which accounts to go after, that's taken out of them as well. So then all they have to do now is focus on that first meeting opportunity and taking that to close. Is that a good way to summarize where you're at, Jason?
Yeah, great summarize. Yeah, that's perfect.
Okay, I didn't mean to interrupt you. So I could just see, I could feel my audience like, okay, what? Wait, which bucket are we going into now? So I just wanted to make sure they got that. And then go ahead and continue now and what you were going to say.
No, you can stop me anytime. Like I said, I can dumb stuff and I start blabbing and I just, you know, anyway. What was I saying?
You were talking about the fact that you're really focused on maximizing return of effort, and so you believe that having management responsible for selecting the accounts to begin with is the way to go.
Yeah. And again, going back to what I was saying earlier, that when you can do that, then you begin to accelerate your sales cycle, and the number of deals that you can close, the number of meetings you can book, and then the number of meetings that you can close, right? So if SDRs are booking more meetings, it's naturally going to convert to more deals won, right? So I would rather them focus on that, instead of that 60% of time, you know, being used to prospect, or 50% of time used to prospect, if I can book, you know, two or three more meetings within that time, that is so valuable, right? Like those activities that they're doing to book meetings is way more valuable than them spending time trying to scour the web, trying to find these accounts, and then, you know, determining whether they think it's qualified or not. So, again, going back to maximizing time, you got to look at where should they be spending their time and make sure they're doing that 100% of the time.
Perfect. So let's pretend now we now have a universe of accounts that have been pre-qualified and we are ready to go. Where's the next area that you see that you're going to debunk the myth for us?
So when it comes to contact data, you know, I know a lot of SDRs will go and look for new contacts, things of that sort. Again, that should be management's role, or, you know, for organizations who have sales operations, either one person or two people, they should be responsible for doing that. Now, that doesn't mean that I myself or, you know, Jeff Bartley is our sales ops person. You know, he shouldn't be looking for those contacts himself, but, you know, maximize other tools that are out there, or, you know, things like Upwork, which used to be Odesk, you know, get some Upwork or Odesk workers. And have them get those contacts for you, right? Give them the parameters, give them the titles, give them the accounts, and say, this is the data I'm looking for. It's really inexpensive, right? You don't want to put an expensive hire, especially, you know, here in Silicon Valley, you know, SDRs, you know, they can be expensive.
Right.
So you don't want them having to look for context, things like that. Sometimes it's fine, but you want them to have a predetermined, pre-qualified set of accounts that they're working on, that they should be working on, and you want to give them the context with their email and phone number as well. So that way, again, they're going in every day. Here's a set of accounts I want to focus on, and I want to reach out to these many individuals within these companies and just have them execute. Again, it's all about executing. So, you know, I used to be a big fan of the SDRs prospecting for accounts and contacts, mm-hmm. and just realized how much time it was taking just wasn't worth it to me anymore. So the next thing to debunk, I guess you could say, is part of what we were talking about before, but really, you know, don't have them spend time looking for contacts. You know, when they are clear about who they're going to reach out to based on the context you provided them, then I want my SDRs to go to LinkedIn and look at that person so they get context of them. And now they can spend more time crafting messaging, right? Mm-hmm. Doing the important work. So,
exactly. And I think the other thing about that concept about offloading the data lookup process, one thing I see a lot still to this day is that the databases are not rich with direct dial phone numbers. We're still seeing a 1-800, the main switchboard numbers that are in a lot of the lists. So having a person not only find the perfect email address, but also dig deeper and try to find some direct numbers, that also will eliminate the number of manual calls, because you'll have to call the switchboard, have them transfer you. Yep. This way you get directly in. So that's another byproduct of having an outsourced type of lookup service that can get you these quality contacts with phone numbers that are direct to save you time when you are doing your block time.
Yeah. And I mean, direct dials, those are, you know, the ultimate piece of data that people want, because direct dials are hard to get these days.
They are.
Especially with a lot of executives, you know, they don't have phones at their desk, and so you're dealing with trying to find their cell phone numbers, essentially. So, you know, the databases people can tap into, Zoom Info, if there are specific verticals they're going after in IT, Discover.org, they have the best direct dial data out there for those verticals that they cover. And then, you know, again, Upwork, getting someone on Upwork to look for that data. Mm-hmm. A lot of them have accounts or access to certain databases, so you know, you want to leverage those as well.
So you opened the Pandora's box of messaging, and you said personalization. And there's a lot of hype online right now from colleagues about when to personalize, how you should personalize, in what form you should personalize. What have you seen out there, Jason?
Yeah, so there are companies that do things different ways, right? And I don't think there's one way you can do this. Mm-hmm. You know, what I would always recommend and how we think about it here is, and this goes back to tiering or segmenting your accounts. So if we're dealing with tier one accounts, I'm, you know, very high touch, right? Very customized messaging, very tailored to that person. And everything should be a manual step, right? There is this wave of automation that took place. It's still here, but it's kind of being, you know, pulled back just a bit. You know, I think automation is powerful, but under the right circumstances. So when you're dealing with tier one accounts, it should be, you know, a lot of customization. When you're dealing with you know, mid-market or corporate size accounts, I like to have a first email be manual, because that's always the foundation of our cadence. Mm-hmm. And then maybe a couple automated steps is fine. That's how we do it here. We have one or two automated steps within our sequences. And then if it's SMB, you know, again, maximizing your time, you don't want to put as much, right? They're smaller companies, lower ACVs and lower contract values, things of that sort. So, if you want to use more automation, they're always open to it. Automation and templates, go for it, right? Mm-hmm. I don't have a problem with that. But again, if you're dealing with large companies, you don't want to send the same message. You don't want to use like a template and use the same message across each department, right? Each department or each individual should have, you know, if you're talking to a VP of sales versus a demand gen person, the messaging should be tailored specifically to what's the problem you're solving for each of those individuals and titles.
in their language. I mean, a lot of what we teach is I look at it more at record sizes, because again, I'm a database kind of geek person. But what I do is I look at those tiers like you talked about, but I also look at the number of records that we're working within those tiers. And that helps me decide when and how to apply mass personalization, which is utilizing the database to populate the email engine for us, versus hyper-personalized, which allows us to look in various social sources and find information about our prospect, our target, and be able to include that in the body of the email. We still, though, like to have the sales messaging, the why change, why now, why us, embedded in template format that the reps can use so that they're making sure that sales argument is there for that particular persona. So we do spend time by persona putting these together in template format. And we can also, what's nice about that is once they record which one they've selected, we start to get some analytics so that we can optimize not only the email itself, but the placement of the email, of what resonated when and where in the sequence it resonated, so that we can start moving these things around like Lego blocks, you know, just getting the most impactful messaging up front to reduce the lag.
No, that's perfect. So, you know, you bring up a good point in terms of, you know, having some level of structure. So we teach a framework here, and over time, you know, the framework that we have, they end up developing their own templates, right for each persona. You know, we used to give people templates and say, hey, just use these. And we noticed that some reps weren't even really doing the thinking anymore. So we developed a framework for them to actually think about, why are you saying this to this persona? And then we'll work with them on developing templates that match their style of writing or speaking. And that's been really effective for us.
Yeah, we do an exercise very similar to that, where I have the reps actually record a conversation as if they're having it with, you know, Betty, the prospect, and record it on their phone and actually transcribe it. And that becomes the basis of the email, that body. So obviously it's in conversational format, but it does a number of things. It allows me to see, do they really know how to have these sales conversations? or, is there a skills issue here that we may be up against as well? They'll get somebody on the phone and then they'll fall apart. So I use it for that. And then also to take the framework that I have, which is compel with content, and apply it to their voice and see how well they've met all of the framework components in order to get that email. And then the last thing I always say is, when you hit that send button, are you transforming this prospect's day by what you're sending?
Yeah.
You know, totally. And that always kind of like, oh, you know. So yeah, well, I'm with you on that as well. And I think personalization has a good role in its place, and it's a good rapport and relationship building exercise. But I think if you're sitting here as an SDR and you're working a ton of records where you can't possibly do 40 emails personalized a day, then you got to figure out the blend of how you want to personalize for what types of accounts, and then use automation to help you get that the rest of the way. What is the number? Do you have a number that you work with your folks on as to what they can what they should be personalizing per day?
Number of emails that they should be personalizing?
Yeah, hyper-personalizing. I'm just curious, because you know how we used to say about in predictable revenue, we used to talk about 5 meaningful conversations a day in a 2-hour block time. I'm just curious if there's a formula you guys are coming up with for hyper-personalization emails, that how many they can crank out and still be meaningful. And like you said, you know, before they hit that send button, that it's really going to be meaningful for their prospect.
Yeah. So we don't. So the metrics I require, and I've never required like hundreds of dials and emails per day. Inbound's a little bit different, but when we're talking about outbound, it's 20 emails and 20 phone calls is my minimum. I require that since the very beginning, like 20 contacts a day. And, you know, when we first started, I was netting out anywhere from 5 to 10 meetings a week per rep. So instead of the volume game, we focus more on
quality.
On quality. And that's been really really effective for us. And I mean, we're a bootstrap company, so you know, we don't have large amounts of funding sitting in our bank account. So you know, it's not like you know, the quality does work for us. It's not like we were like, oh my God, we just have to throw everything in there and see what sticks. And you know, we kind of started with that. We tested some volume stuff in the past, but you just end up burning through accounts, and we don't want to do that.
Right.
So, you know, my reps are only given 150 accounts, and then, you know, we go from there. But yeah, just 20 and 20. Mm-hmm. You know, the emails. So just to clarify, we don't. It's not personalization in terms of like we're researching every like their whole background and what they went to school and adding an email. When we say personalization, it's, you know, we're personalizing it based on what technologies we think they're interested in, you know, what aspects of our product we think they'd be interested in, and tailor it specific to their role at the company and how it can impact their role in terms of what we do. So not so much about, you know, we don't really put very much fluff in our emails.
And who they are as people, you mean? So. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to say, oh my God, I saw you went to school. That's great. Or hey, you live here. Have you ever been to this restaurant before? We don't use any of that. Mm-hmm. But we customize it in a sense using the framework. And once they learn the framework, they can actually develop the emails really quickly. It's not like they're spending, you know, 15 minutes on it. Generally, they can crank it out within 5 minutes. But it becomes very personalized and customized. So,
one of the callers I spoke with recently talked about the fact that they do this writing in block time. Do you have some set times where you that the whole team works on writing, or is it just when they're doing their emails, they're writing?
When they do their emails, they're writing. So we don't have any block time. I don't set anything like that. Mm-hmm. That's a great idea, though. But the reason why, you know, I like using the framework, and I don't mind them spending time doing that, because it's similar to you. I think you have me record an example call first and then write the email. Yeah. We actually have them write out the email first, and then that becomes their call script.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So it kind of kills two birds with one stone. So when they're done sending the email, they can jump on the call. Just, you know, hey, I just sent you an email. If they pick up the phone, then they know the talking points because it's in the email. So that's been really effective for us as well.
Yeah, that's a great way to do it. And I think the blending of phone and email, because the emails need to be conversational. And we have this tendency as folks to get this imaginary quill behind our ear when we start writing. And I think it's because we all were fearful of our English teachers in high school and college that we would do a sentence incorrectly.
Totally.
But our emails really need to be conversational. It's like we're talking.
Yeah,
so
absolutely.
That's why I have people talking to the phone, because I think, you know, first of all, they have to sound coherent, and they have to not use all the jargony types of words. And they have to have a lot of clarity around the why change, why now, why us, all in a very short, concise, sweet little message. So, I like the idea of using phone to help email and email to help phone. I think that's a great way to get people up to speed and onboarded quickly and get your meetings like you're talking about. So,
yeah. And keeping the conversation, I think you're right on point. We have a different philosophy on messaging than I think a lot of companies do. So we don't actually talk about ourselves directly in our emails. We don't ever mention Data Knives. We don't talk about, I get emails all the time that say, you know, I can help you increase your pipeline by X. I've done it for these three companies. They try and use social proof. And, you know, I don't know if that's really that effective anymore, because the conversation and the emails is now all about the company, and it's not about the actual prospect you're reaching out to. So we don't ever use our name in the emails. Some of my reps started doing that, but I, you know, put a stop to that because we want the focus to be on them, right? So we pose and we ask more of a question kind of approach. Mm-hmm. So it's more of like one of our most effective campaigns we did for a while was it was more of a competitive play, competitive angle. So if one of my reps emails you or called you, they would say, let's just, for example, say you work at Marketo, right? You're a VP at Marketo. And one of my guys would email you and say, you know, hey, Mary Lou, if you understood which accounts or which companies were adding and dropping technologies like Eloqua and Pardot, would that data be valuable to you and your sales team? Like, just simple, but we pose a question, didn't mention Data Knives, and oftentimes people respond just like, oh my God, yeah, I would love to understand who's adding and dropping my competitors. That's super valuable. And we were getting reply rates of, you know, upwards of 52 to 54%.
Mm-hmm.
So, our philosophy is we don't talk about ourselves. We don't tell them how we can do X. We just don't have enough context of the company and what they're dealing with to say that we can do that for them yet, right? So
right.
We more approach it within a question-based selling approach, and that's been really, really effective for us.
And I think that hits, you know, one of the teaching points that I like to discuss with clients, and that is that there are certain levels of awareness that your prospects are in. So you cannot make the assumption that they're already comparing and they're at that interested or evaluating stage. A lot of times in our work, we get people who are unaware of who we are, don't know they have a problem, don't really perceive that this problem aligns with what they're working on. So, yes, we have to kind of jolt them a little bit or gently persuade them that all is not good in their world, you know, and they need sort of understand that. But you have to gently and patiently and persistently and pleasantly and delightfully let them know that they're wrong.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we always look at our messaging and ask how will this provoke them in any way or uncover some kind of thing that they're unsure about. So how can we provoke our prospects? And there's a great article by Philip Lay. He used to be part of the Chasm Group, the Michael Moore, the brother crossing the chasm.
Yeah.
Is that Michael Moore? Yeah. They wrote an article in the Harvard Business Review called Provocation-Based Selling. It's really fascinating. I definitely encourage anyone to look at, search that in Google and read the article. And Harvard Business Review, it should be called Provocation-Based Selling. That's really, really fascinating. But we try and use an element of how we provoke people in our messaging and our calls so that, to your point, you know, let them know that, hey, they might not be doing something the right way or not thinking about something in the right way.
Right. Yeah. It's awareness. I mean, it's figuring out and where they are on that level and on that ladder of awareness, because we can't make assumptions that they're further along than they are, especially when we're doing outreach. I mean, we definitely, I've had so many people over the years thank me for contacting them because they had no idea, you know, Citibank, these large accounts, they just don't have time to go run around on the internet finding stuff, you know? So, you know, it's just, they're just grateful when you can hit home with something. They're like, you know, I'm doing a little tiny, next week, a little tiny workshop here in Des Moines. And I was actually talking with someone at the supermarket of all places about what I'm doing. And he was like, oh my gosh, we are just getting ready to look at reorganizing our sales process. I can't believe you're here and that you're going to be over there. You know, so it's like, you never know where people are. They have no idea what they really need to do and how urgent it is. And so you start talking to them, but you have to meet them where they're at in their head, in their purchase intent. Yeah. So that's great that you do that. We only have a few minutes left. So let's talk about one more thing to debunk so that I can get my group all hot and bothered about, oh my gosh, everything I read is all different. But tell me what else, which is good. I mean, it's where we are, you know, it's just technology. It's why we love what we do, because we're constantly iterating. We're constantly optimizing. So what's another one of your favorite things that you would like to share with the audience today?
Let's take another one.
Anything on metrics or any analytics?
See, do you think this will provoke them? The idea of startups should not have sales territories.
I think every one of my clients has territories. So do tell. Let's hear this.
Yeah, this doesn't come from me. This is I was having a conversation with Daniel Barber.
Daniel was on the podcast, so he talked to us about planning and how we don't plan properly. So yeah.
So we had a conversation about this in the car the other day, but. You know, the idea of startups having territories, I think it's an interesting one, right? So, you know, when Daniel Barber came here to Datanize, we quickly recreated, restructured our accounts. And, you know, I think a lot of territories, people do it different ways. Like there is, you know, segmenting by most of the time it's based on region, right?
Mm-hmm. Geographic,
geographic, right? So, vertical. But that's not necessarily the right way to do it, right? So it's, I think for startup companies, you want, I mean, maybe this is as debunking as it is, but instead of breaking things out in geographic areas and having like, these are our geographic territories, you want to base it more on developing an account profile, mm-hmm. no matter where they are, right? And base it off that profile, right? Because it's more about making sure you're speaking to the right types of accounts versus like, is, you know, what region they're in. Mm-hmm. And so I don't, for me, you know, even at Data Nines, we don't have geographic based territories. Mm-hmm. Everything is based on our tiering and segmented tier 1, 2, and 3. And then I guess you can consider those our territories, right? But it's not based on anything like geographic. It's based on, for us, a tier one that's going to be a company that is a most likely a tech company, because we sell to tech companies, right? So can be classified as a company that has either used Salesforce, Marketo, Alka, or Pardot. They have a sales team of over 250 and a marketing team above 44 people. That's what we classify tier one. Right. All those accounts that are in our Salesforce, they belong to our enterprise reps. Doesn't matter if they're East Coast or West Coast. Like, you know, those accounts are evenly split, because we say these tier one accounts, they must be our customers, right? Mm-hmm. And it doesn't matter based on geographic. Tier two, we classified same technology, Salesforce, Marketo, Alibaba, Pardot, or they're using HubSpot, right? Mm-hmm. And then their marketing team is between 20 and 48, and mm-hmm. sales between I think it's 100 and 249 or something like that, right? And then those are our mid-market, and then those belong to our mid-market reps. So how people, I think, traditionally have defined territories, I think, goes back to the geography of things, which doesn't really make sense. Like, why should that really matter? Right? It's more of making sure you have the right criteria for the accounts that you say should be your customers at all costs. I think that's mm-hmm. what the focus should be, especially for startups, right? I think startup companies like, okay, you're, you know, let's focus on California and New York and just like drive as much as we can there, versus like, oh, let's take a step back and identify, here's what our account looks like, and regardless of where they exist, we're going to make sure that they're our customers. And so I think people should kind of start thinking in that regard.
And that's a tough one, I think, because, you know, especially I'm thinking real estate. I have some clients who are in real estate who want to branch out nationally. It's difficult for them to even get their arms around, how are we going to do this? They're B2C. But in reality, you know, they can move geographically around. They don't have to have presence and billboards and all the things that they're so used to doing. I think there's a mindset there that, you know, the beauty of the technology is that we can try to reach out to these other neighborhoods and see what it is that their needs are. And I have some clients too who actually physically go visit their accounts. So, you know, the healthcare industry is still, you know, they're still old style in some areas. So I think you really overlay with the ideal accounts, high revenue potential, high likelihood of closing. You want them as customers. And then this factory model that you're talking about of, you know, round robin, the reps get them as they go. And when there's something active, the next available rep gets it. And it's a very different way of looking at things, but it's one to explore. And it may be you don't do it for every tier, but I think it's something that people would probably benefit from, because especially if you're allowing people to work with multiple SDRs and do multiple types of partnering up instead of these pod concepts, I think there's a lot of change coming down that it's worth exploring. And don't be so set in your ways when it comes to organization of the teams, because, you know, we really need to experiment to see what works for your culture and what works in selling your products and services. And that's what you taught us today, Jason, is, you know, look outside the box a bit, people, because things, you know, technology changed. Our reach is like with my real estate, our reaches are changing. So let's figure out how we can leverage technology and process and people in order to be able to reach our intended targets authentically and with, you know, value. And that's really what it's all about.
Absolutely.
So thank you so much for joining us today. How do people get a hold of you now that they're all intrigued by our conversation today?
They can reach out to me on LinkedIn, or if they want, they can email me directly. My email is jason@datanize. That's D A TANYZE.com. So Jason at datanize.com. Or if they want to tweet at me, my handle is at Jason C, as in Charlie Vargas.
Okay. And I'll put all this in the show notes, Jason, including that that Harvard Business Review article so that people can at least get there quicker. I very much appreciate you coming in on the show today and talking with everybody. And just to remind you all, I mean, Jason's doing, he's like walking the walk. He's out there doing this type of development. So it's not sitting behind a desk somewhere saying in theory how things should work. He's actually applying all these principles and testing and iterating and optimizing and systematizing every single day. So if you're at a point where you really want some assistance or to kind of run ideas off of, Jason's a great resource for that. Thanks again for your time today, Jason.
Yeah, it's a pleasure.